David D. Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. Joining us on the phone is John Raymond, longtime union organizer and somebody who has his finger on the pulse. A while back, we started a conversation about worker safety, and I want to kind of pick up on that. I think when we had you on last, we had like some crazy breaking news that happened. I think it was the death of George Floyd.
Correct.
That happened that day.
That kind of overtook everything else. Yeah.
Yeah, that was an unfortunate situation, but we're glad to have you back. You've been very concerned about what is not taking place with workers in their safety. I mean, here we are on a Monday. It is the start of the school year here in Oakland, and we still don't, you know, and there's still a lot of people, teachers, who are concerned that safety precautions aren't there. We've seen in other parts of the country, schools reopened and folks going and catching the coronavirus. That in itself is overshadowed equally insidious type of situations, such as what's happening in the food chain. People who are working under the guise of being essential workers, but not fully being protected. So I want to get your thoughts on that. You know, let's start off just looking at things locally and then work our way to this larger picture of the food chain in terms of worker safety. You would think with 150,000 deaths at this point in time and, you know, millions of people having contacted this virus, that there would have been a stepping up of the guard, so to speak, but it seems almost intentional not to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, you have to keep track of it hour by hour. It's up to 160,000 now. And, I mean, I was just listening on the news this morning. I think there's been almost 30 deaths due to COVID-19 at San Quentin of the prisoners.
Right.
And something like a dozen guards or anyway employees there. And of course, that's an aspect of it that is totally ignored in general is what's happening in the prisons. Now you're going to have, with the end of the $600 a week unemployment supplement, they're predicting, I think it's 40 million evictions by January.
40 million?
Yes. It's just incredible. And so what's going to happen with those, with all those people? I mean, amongst other things, that's a healthcare crisis, amongst other things. So this situation is not getting better. It's getting worse. And it's also getting worse in another way. You see that rally of 250,000 bikers out there in South Dakota.
Right.
And you're getting, it's almost like a mass hysteria or a mass insanity. And when you listen to some of the conspiracy theories, it's like a mental health crisis. Some of the stuff that people are subscribing to. And so, in addition to just the day-to-day events and the immediate steps that have to be taken, we also have to have an understanding of what is the underlying causes of this pandemic and why it is that this is just the first, unless some serious changes are made, there's going to be even worse pandemics coming along.
Let me ask you this. You talked about a mass hysteria. And I'm looking at, you know, mass hysteria in this case would be just a collective consciousness of groups of people who believe something that could be detrimental at the end of the day. So 250,000 bikers in Sturgis, South Dakota, just like, nah, it ain't true. It's 5G. It's a conspiracy. You know, you've heard them all. You know, are acting with reckless abandon. But at the same time, they're looking at people like you who may wear a mask and may feel like something is a foul. And they're saying, well, you know, you're the one that's crazy, not them. But on both sides of the track, in the back of their heads, this is just my opinion. There's a group of people that's like, I hope they all get COVID-19 and die. All those people in South Dakota. And they're probably sitting there going, I hope all these liberals or all these black people or all these quote-unquote illegal immigrants and whoever they consider the other get it and they die. And I think people are kind of, in some way or form or fashion, are acting on the hopes that this pandemic will take the other out. Is there an insanity in thinking in that way?
Well, I have to say it's the other ones that are insane, not us. But, I mean, it's understandable. If a group of people act with complete reckless abandon, and they not only endanger themselves, but endanger everybody else around them, it is inevitable that there's going to be resentment against them. And I know I myself feel resentment. When people say things, you know, about... Well, for instance, I know one guy that said, your health is your responsibility, not mine. So, and it's not just him. It's that's, you know, there's millions of people who have that attitude. And so it's inevitable then, if somebody is going to do something to not just endanger themselves, but to endanger everybody around them, then, yeah, people are going to feel resentment against them. I do. That's just natural.
Now, I hear you. Let's talk about the food chain and factory farmers and all that. How are you seeing this? And this was a thing that you've been chomping at the bit about for a minute. And what should we be concerned about? And are things moving in a direction right now where we can see the catastrophe behind it?
Right. So, first of all, there's a biologist who I'd like to recommend. There's a guy named Rob Wallace, who's been writing about this stuff for years. And he wrote a book called Big Farms Make Big Flu. He's got another book coming out in about a month, I think.
What's his name again?
Rob Wallace.
Okay, Rob Wallace.
And the book is Big Farms Make Big Flu. And this is an expert in the field. He used to consult for the United Nations and so on until he started explaining what's really happening. And then he kind of got run out of things. But there's a word that I've learned and that we all should be familiar with nowadays. It's called zoonoses or zoonotic diseases. And what that is diseases that jump the species barrier from other animals to the human species, which is what COVID-19 is. But there's been a whole series of such diseases, some of which are more serious than others. Ebola was one of them. What they called swine flu was another. And there's been a whole series like that. And what Wallace explains is that this process has been accelerating in recent years for two main reasons. One is wild habitat destruction, and the other is factory farming. Hmm. And it goes something like this, that they have these what they call factory or industrial farms, for instance, with pigs. And pigs are especially important in this, because their immune systems are fairly similar to human immune systems. And you pack 1,000 of them in cheek by jowl together.
Right.
All together. And so a virus that develops in one of them will just go like wildfire throughout the entire herd of pigs. Not only that, but then, and we know that viruses mutate fairly easily. Not only that, but then the time between when a piglet is born and when it's sent to the slaughterhouse has been increasingly shortened, gotten shorter and shorter. So then the virus pressure is put on viruses to be able to spread themselves even faster because the pigs are being killed. And this is true for geese, cows, all other meat animals. then in addition to that, these factory farms, and it's not just factory farms, it's for instance also for instance palm oil. These palm oil plantations, they're cutting down, destroying massive amounts of wild habitat, and that's forcing wild animals to come into ever closer contact with domestic animals, and especially bats. And incidentally, bats have a very powerful immune system, and so therefore they are host to all kinds of viruses. So you have these two factors together, and that is what is causing the development of many different zoonotic diseases. And if you take, for instance, swine, what used to be called swine flu until the hog farm industry opposed it because it hurt the sale of ham and so on.
Right.
Rob Wallace explains that that developed around the factory hog farms in and around Veracruz in Mexico. And he says it should really be called NAFTA flu, because due to NAFTA, that was what drove the small hog farmers out of business in Mexico, and created these big factory farms. And then the virus is mutated from one to another. It's like a dried out forest without any fire breaks. Sooner or later, there's going to be a fire that just rages through the entire forest. And instead of a forest fire, now you have these viruses. Right. Now, in the case of the virus that causes COVID-19, originally they thought that it was had developed entirely in that wet farm. Now there's some evidence that it may have partly developed there, but also partly in some hog farms in a different part of China. They really don't know for sure.
Wow.
But one thing, you know, all of these theories about it was developed in a lab and all that sort of thing, that is almost certainly not true, because the virus has genetic fragments from different animals, and that would have not have happened. Now, and if it had been in a lab. And the reason that I think that it's so important for us to understand this is the thing that makes COVID-19 so dangerous is how easily it's spread. But it is true that it has a fairly low mortality rate, something between 1 and 3%, something like that. But it just spreads like wildfire. Now, there are other viruses that have developed through this same process, for instance, the Nipah virus, which has a mortality rate of 40 to 75%.
Mm.
So just imagine what's going to happen, you know, if a virus like that mutates. The thing with Nipah virus, it's not spread very easily. But
right.
Imagine if you had a virus like that one, but also as easily spread as the virus that causes COVID-19. So, you know, the point is that we as working class people have got to start to understand the science behind it, because the dangers that exist are absolutely enormous. And who's going to be suffering from it? It's going to be, you see, like these rich capitalists, they've gotten themselves big, huge yachts that they've anchored out off the Mediterranean coast and off the, and in the Caribbeans. They just isolated themselves. They're the ones making the money off of the habitat destruction and the factory farms. We're the ones who will be suffering and dying.
So let me tie this up here, John, because our time is short. What do you think people should be doing? We have this awareness. We're seeing the concern. And I started off by talking about worker safety. And, you know, it sounds like at all points, people are exposed unduly to this virus with the potential for it to have a ravaging effect. What are the marching orders that you would give our listeners at this point?
So, of course, we have to deal with the day-to-day effects of COVID-19, including, for instance, for workers to have to set up their own safety committees on the job to decide what is and is not safe, and for them to have the right to shut down their own jobs, and also for any worker to be able to walk off the job if they feel it's unsafe and collect unemployment insurance. These are some things that we have to demand, and we have to get out into the streets and protest and fight for it, and also organize within our own unions to make the unions fight for that, for their own members and for all working class people. But at the same time, it's become clear that science is too important to be left to these top capitalists that are the only ones that know about it. And if you take, for instance, Bill Gates, who's been on TV all around as a big expert on that, well, Bill Gates is one of the main ones who's responsible for factory farming and for habitat destruction. He's no savior of ours.
How's he responsible? Is he funding it, or?
Well, through the Gates Foundation, you know, and his whole supposed concern about hunger around the world and stuff, he's pushing this so-called Green Revolution, which is involved in habitat destruction and factory farming. And of course, all the conspiracy theories about Gates and vaccines and all that stuff, they're just a complete distraction at best. So the other thing is we have to educate ourselves on these issues. And in the end, I mean, the Democrats and the Republicans are equally responsible as far as the environmental disasters that are developing. And we as working class people need to build our own political party and a party that not only fights for the day-to-day issues like worker safety, evictions, against racism and police brutality and so on, but also takes up these longer-term issues like how food is produced and saving the natural habitat, not only here at home, but we see with COVID-19 that we have to link up with workers and small farmers all around the world, especially in Africa and Asia, to support them in fighting for their interests there, as far as stopping habitat destruction and so on.
No, I hear you on that. You know, what time is short today, and I appreciate you sharing with us some of these things. I especially hope that people take to heart the fact that, you know, people need to start formulating policies on their own terms and making sure that they're carried out in terms of worker safety. Because it seems like on the other side of the track, they're putting in place everything from penalization, you know, all sorts of penalties and financial disincentives. If you decide to stay home, you already have people at the highest level saying they're cutting off unemployment because people are just wanting to stay home and not work. So there's a clear agenda on their part. The question is, what's our agenda to push back as working class people? John, I appreciate you taking time out. Is there anything coming up or anything that we should look out for before we let you go?
Well, I would just urge people, if you're interested in what I've been talking about, to take a look at my blog site, oaklandsocialist.com. That's oaklandsocialist, all one word, .com. And we certainly try to keep up with all the different news.
There you have it. So oaklandsocialist.com is the website. And we will be on the lookout. And also, don't forget Rob Wallace's book, which is Big Farmer, Big Flu.
So Big Farms Make Big Flu, yes.
Big Farms Make Big Flu. Thank you.